We've got a couple of distinguished guests. You hear both of them on the radio station. We'll start out with Steve Hilberg here. He's with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, where he serves as the director at the Illinois State Water Survey as well. He's not the director of the survey, but at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. He takes a look at the weather with us on Friday afternoons, and I really like to talk to Steve, especially during the growing season. He has as good a handle on what's been happening, not only state of Illinois, but across the Midwest, as any of the weather folks that we talk to. He's a climatologist, and one of the fun things that we get to talk with him about during the growing season, just as the season starts to wind down in August, we start to ask Steve just a bit about the numbers that are being produced on the size of the crop out of some of the information that they gather at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. They've been making crop predictions for a number of years. Not many people know about it. You have to pay for that information, generally speaking, but we managed to get Steve to pry it out of Steve on Friday afternoons. And the really nice thing about it is that it finishes up about late August, somewhere in that. Yeah. It stops really updating where it thinks the crop size is going to be about late August after all the weather is calculated in. And it's been a fair predictor of what the size of the crops are. Next to him is the chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, at the radio station. Everybody knows Ed. Ed's probably the most listened to meteorologist in downstate Illinois, and probably the person who is the most well-known on the radio station, as best I can tell. He's been with the station since maybe a couple of years prior to the time I started. When did you start? 87? 1987. I was on the air. Were you on the air at all before then?
What's that?
Were you on the air at all before then at the radio station at WOL?
No, you in college were on before
me. Oh, yeah, I like to go back a little farther.
So.
Yeah, well, you've been there continuously. Yeah. I started in college in 1985, so I do like to put that out there just for fun. But Ed's far more well-known than either Dave or I across the state of Illinois and Indiana. Everybody listens to Ed Kieser's weather forecast. We like to think of him as the premier weather forecaster in the state of Illinois and across a good portion of the Midwest. We're going to put him to the test today and see what he has to say about the upcoming weather. Now, if you listen to Ed, you know that if we get farther out than 10 days, he doesn't like to talk about it. So don't ask him any of those questions about drought this summer, right? So, Ed, let's talk about El Nino and La Nina, okay?
What about it? What do you want to know?
Dude, let's talk about La Nina. Well, let's talk about this just a bit. You know, on the radio station, we have a whole bunch of weather people. And if you don't listen during the closing mark report all the way to the end, please do. Please do, all the way to the end. There's a weather segment at the bottom of the hour, 32 after, and that's where Steve airs on Friday afternoons. But there are four other guys that are on there. So we've got six, really, that we look at, along with Ed and the rest of the staff at the radio station, but six that are taking a look at the growing regions around the nation. If you haven't listened all the way through the closing market report to the weather segment, you're missing one of the best segments that we do on the air, in my opinion, that has more information about the rest of the globe than anything else, because we take up China and Brazil, Argentina, the Ukraine, Australia, South Africa, and all those places that are competing with you. Ed talks about those, and so do the rest of the folks that we talk with on the air. Now, that brings me back to Drew Lerner. And we want to talk a little bit about El Nino and La Nina with Drew, because we know that the last time we had that big spike in the marketplace, I was kidding Drew on the air and told him that we called that the Lerner High. Right? We called it the Lerner High because that was recently. Drew had taken a look at some of the weather predictions from NOAA and made a suggestion that that went out a little further and that was going to have an impact on the growing season this year. Now, I'm not going to ask you to go out and contradict Drew or tell me something different or what you think about Drew's, what he's had to say, but I want you to talk about El Nino and La Nina and how one changes from the other to begin with so we can understand this. What one is and what the other one is.
You know,
one's cooling of the weather, the water off of the equatorial area, right?
Well, maybe should I just define these terms?
That's what I'm asking you to do. Go ahead. Why don't you define them, please?
All right. Well, El Nino is warmer than average water temperatures in the equatorial Pacific Ocean, just off the coast of South America. La Nina is the opposite. That's cooler than average water temperatures in the equatorial Pacific just off of the coast of South America. And that's what it is. So several years ago when I heard a news story where Dan Rather said, we're going to fly into the eye of El Nino, I thought, what are you going to do, crash the plane in the ocean? Because that's where it is. It's water temperatures and just comparing the temperature of the water there to average. And the strongest that El Nino and La Nina gets is during our winter. So that's the first thing that you should keep in mind. So that means the impact on the global weather and climate is more so in the winter than summer. So as far as the growing conditions here, I think a lot of times it's overplayed because we're not growing crops here in the winter. But that's what El Nino and La Nina are. They're opposites.
Yet we've had a weather market to some extent based off of some of these predictions. You're telling us that potentially it's the weather's too unpredictable at this point. That far out, has NOAA been able to do some modeling? Have you taken a look at these kinds of things?
Well, I'm going to say NOAA does have their extended outlooks, their monthly and seasonal outlooks they issue. And during the winter, they're very much tied to what they think is going to be happening with the El Nino Southern Oscillation, which is the sort of collective name for the whole thing. And that's what their forecast for this winter was based on, was the aspect of a strong, moderate to strong El Nino, which really didn't come quite to pass. So if their forecast for that oscillation, for the development or decay of the El Nino is off, that can sort of ruin the whole forecast. So this was not your typical El Nino year.
No, and I was going to add that the only really good correlation to Midwestern weather and El Nino is if there is a strong El Nino, such as we had back around 1998. And then in the winter, we typically have warmer than average temperatures and about half the average snowfall. Now, we've had many other winters since then where that's happened. It's been mild with a lack of snowfall, but that's been for other reasons. But this El Nino going in didn't look like it's going to be that strong, but I think some people just see El Nino and assign all sorts of weather conditions just because they see that word, as people are looking for simple solutions to complex problems.
Is there any better correlation to La Nina
No.
in the weather here?
No, actually there's very little correlation.
Part of the problem is we don't have a lot of cases that you could, you'd really want a large sample to get some information from. And we just don't have that kind of history of that kind of information. But the other thing, there's a lot more at work than just El Nino. That is not the only what we call teleconnection going in the there's a whole menu of oscillations and indices, the Arctic Oscillation, the North Pacific Oscillation, the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation, and they're discovering more and more of these. Back in, 83 we had an El Nino? We knew very little about it then. 97, 98 was a whole new era because we had monitoring stations out in the Pacific, and they actually could sort of monitor El Nino in real time. But even since then, now we've discovered a lot more things going, and that's why this winter I don't think ended up anything like what people thought it was going to be, because there's a lot more at work. How many of you remember the winter of 1977-78 around here? Guess what? That was an El Nino winter. That was a moderate El Nino. That's what this one looked like back in the fall. And if you look through the records, we've had winters that have been El Nino winters that have been cold and snowy. But the tendency, the trend, the probability is for a warmer, drier. That's if all things line up right. This year, there were other things at work.
Okay, so tell me now that we've had this bit of a discussion, as you take a look into the next month, 2 months, 3 months, where do you think the weather will stand for the Midwest? How do we look as far as moisture content at this point across the bulk of the growing region?
Well, let me talk about the monitoring. I'll let Ed address the forecast
Thanks.
Issue because we don't do forecasting, Todd. In terms of...
That's why he's a climatologist.
In terms of, to paraphrase Star Trek, damn it, Todd, I'm a meteorologist, not a climatologist. The moisture situation in the Midwest and the corn belt in general is excellent right now. Actually, maybe too excellent, if you could be too excellent. If you look down, soil moisture is at or above normal by 50-60% in much of the area in the top 12 to 18 inches, and pretty good all the way down to 72. Much of the southern and central plains, the Midwest, Ohio Valley, got well above normal precip during the fall and winter. And the only areas that are really problems right now are on the fringes. If you've been watching any of the drought outlooks or drought monitor, northern Minnesota and Wisconsin into the Dakotas has been under some extreme drought, and that's been since last summer. And we're starting to see dryness developing in the southeast, pushing into Kentucky. But in between, everybody, in terms of current moisture situation, things are in very good shape. And as long as we don't have a really wet spring where it starts restricting getting into the fields, I think we'll go into the spring with more than enough soil moisture to get things going.
You want to take a stab at a forecast?
Stab at a forecast. Well,
shot in the dark.
I do think that we're still in a very active weather pattern, so I would not be surprised to see the plus bias on precipitation continuing here over the first couple weeks of March. And we had a little discussion during lunch about feedbacks, and it, certainly with the wet ground out there, and especially if we get some more rain and a lot of snow runoff to where we have the pooling of water and some of the river bottoms, it will make it a little easier for some weather systems to come through to tap a little more moisture to maybe make a little more rain. Not to a great degree. I guess what our feeling is it will help cut down the change in direction toward being very dry, more so than just keeping it extremely wet. But right now, there's no real problems with moisture as far as dryness anywhere in this area. The only concerns I really think are with maybe a little too much water in the fields, especially in those areas that I'm told some field work didn't get done in the Wabash Valley here in the fall. So you need a nice window of opportunity of dry weather even before planting. That is a little bit of concern. But I've also had a lot of producers tell me that they can deal with a little bit of the wet issues better than extreme dryness, and we certainly don't have the extreme dryness right now. And going into the spring, I don't see us turning completely dry. As we go farther out, that's where it gets tricky. You really can't make a specific forecast because nobody really knows exactly what the weather patterns will be. But there'd have to be a dramatic change in the weather pattern to go completely dry, and we don't see that happening yet. But that's something that's always a possibility, as is anything.
If you've got questions for Ed or for Steve, just raise your hand up and we'll get to those. Ed, since you started down the road of spring field work, how are things setting up at this point in the southern part of the United States? They'll be the first, of course, into the planting season, and they might be putting a lot more corn in the ground, especially from Cairo to Memphis.
Well, it's been pretty wet recently in the Delta, but it's dramatically different between the Delta and the Southeast. The Southeast has been rather dry lately, but some of these recent storm systems have been bringing thunderstorms and downpours to portions of the Delta. So there's moisture to work with in the Delta, not as much in the Southeast. So there's a bit of a difference between those two southern locations. But from Memphis on southward, there's enough moisture in the ground to get started.
Steve, as you take a look at the winter season, I want to ask a little bit about anhydrous ammonia, mostly related to natural gas use. As we got started earlier in the season, it was very warm. We've been very cold. Natural gas used for a lot of things, mm-hmm. but as the primary input for nitrogen. So we're looking at supplies. I don't want you to predict supplies of natural gas, right. But where are we climatologically at this point? Well, over the long haul of the season,
this was a very interesting season to watch. Everybody remembers that roughly from Thanksgiving through mid January, it was other than that first 10 days of December, it was very warm. By I think it was like the 20th of January, the average temperature for the winter season, basically that's December 1st through the current date, winter being the December, January, February. But the average temperature for the winter season through about January 20th in East Central Illinois was about 8 degrees above normal. That was on a obviously on a record pace. As of today, we're down to about 0.6 of a degree above normal for the winter. The last week of January and February has basically knocked off 8 degrees of departure from that. So they're very cold February so far. It just sort of remarkable how that just totally eroded that departure away. And when you look at, if you go back and look at a map of the winter for this year, 5 years from now, it's going to show near normal temperatures. The trouble is one number doesn't describe how things change throughout the season or throughout the month, so it can be a little misleading. But that's what we went through this year. So last, you know, power bills reflected, the last 4 weeks have been pretty brutal for everybody.
Pretty brutal. How far south was it cold? And I want to know how far south did we get killing cold?
Oh,
based, and I'm looking for kudzu and Asian soybean rust. I knew you knew that.
I'm trying
one.
To think how far south we saw temperatures in the teens and 20s, and Ed may have to help me out here. But the cold did manage to penetrate at least through Arkansas, maybe into the northern, maybe into the Gulf at times. We had some the coldest weather of the last, I don't know, 5-7 years this year. I mean, part of the reason being somewhat good shape here and why we're going to have problems with water is we had a lot of very cold weather that froze the ground. We had no snow cover, which tends to insulate the ground. So that ground froze solid, and then we had snow on top of it, so it's going to thaw slower, and it's going to be a while before we get all that frost out of the ground and the water can start penetrating. But we had some pretty good cold outbreaks that went just about to the Gulf.
I was going to say that I know temperatures did drop into the teens well down into Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. So away from the immediate Gulf Coast got quite cold.
So it should be that should have done the number on Asian soybean rust. I know you're not an expert in that area, but Asian soybean rust has to have a green leaf to live on. And while it's been in Illinois and Indiana in the last fall, it does have to have something to survive on in order to propagate the next year. Otherwise, it has to come up from Florida or from Louisiana, deep into the south, apparently, at this point. So that should be very good news, I would think, for farmers across the Midwest and soybean producers. Take a look at around the rest of the globe, if you would, for me, Ed, very quickly. What do you see as trouble spots at this point? And maybe we should talk about Australia, if you've looked at it. Have they recovered at all in their wheat-growing regions from the severe drought?
Not yet, but there's some outlook suggesting that some rain may be coming to some of the wheat areas in Australia in March, so there may be some gradual improvement. But that's one area of concern. It looks like in South Africa, dryness is going to cause some yield reductions there, which isn't unusual, although I think last year they had a pretty good crop. On the other hand, the weather has improved for South America. In fact, there may be now some concern with too much water in southern Argentina. They got some very heavy rains in portions of San Luis, La Pampa, Buenos Aires, southern Cordoba, southern Santa Fe, and southern Entre Rios during the last 2 days. Many places getting 3 to 8 inches of rain, one place getting over 8 inches. But so there may be a few places that got – a few fields got drowned out, but certainly any concerns of dryness in Argentina are now over. Meanwhile, in northern Brazil, they were too wet. When I say northern Brazil, the northern growing areas of Brazil, obviously they're not growing soybeans in the Amazon basin, but they've dried out a bit, so that's favorable for them. So it does look like a rather big crop is probably coming out of South America this year.
Anybody got questions for our weather panel that they want answered? Steve, I have a question for you very quickly, and I'd like you just to take me through the process that your analysis does when it predicts at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, when it goes through and predicts crop size and the crop monitor. What is it? How does it work? Is it very accurate?
Is it very accurate?
Maybe not.
Define accurate, Todd.
Well,
it's generally,
could it go up 5 cents or down? No.
Generally, we run a few. I would say the average. I have to go back and look because we haven't quite got into it yet. But probably runs about 5% lower than the general USDA final average yields. And a part of the reason for that is a strictly weather-driven crop model. We don't take into account, you know, insect infestation, disease, or that type of thing. It's strictly weather-driven. The soybean model is based on the soy grow crop model, and the corn model is based on the series maize model. So these are well-established models that we've made some modifications to. They're run weekly. And what we give is a range of probability of yields based on different probability levels, 10%, I think we go 10%, 25, 50, and then 75, and then a median value. So you get a range of probabilities of yields based on the crop development to date, the weather to date, and then basically what a climatological extension of the weather out through the end of the growing season. So as you get toward the end of the growing season, the model, I mean, obviously you're taking in, you're more into account what weather has actually occurred than what has left to basically predict. So it tends to converge on a number, you know, as you mentioned, in August. So, but it does, you can see reflections in due to dryness or too much rain, not enough rain. There are some resolution issues with it, but we do cover the entire growing region, including the Dakotas and Kansas for corn and soybeans, wherever they're growing them. And you can see the range of probabilities for each state and as it contributes to the Midwest. So you can look at the variations.
And if I wanted to find it, where would it be? And how much would it cost me to see it?
We have a subscription service at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center called the Midwestern Climate Information System, or MICUS as we call it. And it's basically pay as you go. You can just make a deposit and you just spend it when you want to use something. And that's it. It's very relatively inexpensive. I think we asked for a deposit to account of about $40, and that gives you as much use as you can get out of it for that, and you can renew it if you want or not if you don't. But there's a whole variety of climate information, not just the crop models, but weather information and climate information for any location in the Midwest.
Ed, anything you want to wrap up with as we close out this session?
Listen to AM 580. Watch WILL TV if you get it. We do have our weather forecast on the web at WILL.UIUC.edu. And I believe for those that are familiar with RSS, I'm not completely familiar with RSS, but our forecast is now being fed on an RSS feed. So you could probably have our updated forecast come to your computer as soon as we update it. At least that's, I think, the theory behind it. But I think the thing I want to just say is the atmosphere is complicated, and as I've said in years past here, if you hear somebody that has a simple answer to a complex problem, be skeptical, and that's why we're on the air every day giving you the latest information, because those that pay attention on a daily basis can make the better decisions. And unfortunately, we don't have simple solutions to long-range forecast problems. If somebody did, year in and year out, have the exact forecast for what it's going to do in July and August, sitting here at the end of February, you'd know that person by name. Everybody would. Yeah. And I don't know of anybody that we all turn to year after year for that, because that person doesn't exist. So I hate to say it takes work to by paying attention on a daily basis to make the best decisions.
Just sort of a segue quick from that, on paying attention on a daily basis, one of the features we have at the Climate Center, which is not in the page, which is on our public portion of our website, is what we call the Midwest Climate Watch. And it's one page where you can get temperatures across the Midwest, precipitation, soil moisture, high temperatures, lows, a whole range of basically climate information that's current as of today, and that's available to anyone. And that's a good way to quickly get an overview of what's going on in the Midwest and in the country.
Okay, time for some drawings. Give these folks a hand, please.